If you're anything like me when you go traveling, you wake up in the morning thinking about food and you go to bed at night thinking about food. You analyze it, you search for it, you talk about it, and sometimes you even get to eat it. And there are, of course, countries that do food better than others. I mean, there are people that go to France just for the food. There are people that go to Italy and Vietnam and Japan and sometimes even Peru just for the food. And if you agree with my feelings on this topic, then you'll also have a deep love for a country that might just do the best food in the entire world, which I think is Spain. Hi, I'm Ben Groundwater, and you're listening to Flight of Fancy, the Traveller podcast. Today, obviously, we're going to be talking about food. Which country offers the best experience for travellers? Which combines the best fine dining as well as fun times? For the first half of today's episode, we're going to geek out on the food of Spain. And then later on, we're going to talk about some other countries that have great food, as well as a few horror stories. To help me navigate this world of deliciousness, I have two foodie experts on board. My first guest is the co-owner and chef at Fire Door Restaurant. His name is Lennox Hasty. Lennox.
Hey, how are you going?
Good. Thank you very much for joining us. And to stop me from just pestering Lennox with Spanish food questions for the next 4 hours, we also have a writer from Fairfax's Good Food section, Shani Rawson.
Hey, Ben. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, guys, both so much for coming along. Now, let's lay our cards out on the table straight away. What is the best country in the world for food? Shani.
This is so hard because I love everywhere that I've been, but Japan has really been a standout for me. Just, I went to Japan not on assignment or anything like that. I just went for a week to have a break, and I don't think I had a bad meal with doing next to no research, which for me is the mark of somewhere really amazing.
Well, you can't go too wrong.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And what about you, Lennox?
Is it Australia?
Is it Australia? Well, hey, that is a genuine answer.
It could be, I think. Yeah. It could be. I think Australia's right up there in terms of what it's offering now in terms of diversity and its different cultural backgrounds, and it doesn't have to define itself by one culture. I love Japan. I've only been there once, but I think it's right up there for my all-time food experiences. But I'd say my heart probably is still in Spain at this time.
Yeah. Now, I have to admit to having a little fanboy moment here, because not only are you the chef at my favorite restaurant in Sydney, but you also trained at my favorite restaurant in the entire world, Etchaburi. How did you end up there? For people who don't know, this is... It's now one of the best restaurants in the world, but it's
10.
also a place that doesn't necessarily represent any particular culture's food. It's kind of its own thing, isn't it?
It is very much its own thing. I mean, it's very Basque. I mean, it's part and parcel of its environment. It's located in the hills, inland from Bilbao, but it does probably some of the best shellfish and the seafood for me in the world, which is insane. But it's very much a product of its owner and its creator. And what it's become today, and it's very different from anything else in the world.
Yeah.
It is unique.
So everything is cooked over fire there, essentially.
Yeah, essentially, yeah. That's the basis of the cuisine, and it's really pushing the boundaries on ingredients and fire.
Yeah. So tell me about Spain. Where did you live when you were there?
I started like a lot of young chefs of my time. I started in San Sebastian.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine had a stage in Mugaritz, one of the sort of the very Michelin regarded restaurants down there, and I literally jumped in the car, road trip down to San Sebastian, always wanted to see what the fuss was about, and because my background was Michelin restaurants, I literally went straight knocking on the doors of all the 3-star restaurants, because I just wanted to improve my skills, learn as much as possible, and understand a lot about Basque and the Spanish cuisine, and began working in a couple of the 3-star restaurants outside of San Sebastian, and progressively kind of, I think, got to that point where I try to find, you try to find, define yourself and define what you want to do in the future. And so the direction a lot of the 3-star restaurants are going, I think not just in Spain, but also around the world, kind of left me with an amazing experience, but not something that would sustain me on a daily basis as a chef.
Right.
Okay. And for me, it's a long-term game. It's something I've always decided I want to do since I was 15. Mm-hmm. And, I think it's very important for any chef to find that one thing that's going to keep them going through the industry.
Yeah, right.
And I was literally looking for something, I don't know what I was looking for exactly, but something that was real.
Mm-hmm.
And overheard a couple of guys in one of the local Pinchos bars in San Sebastian, basically talking about mentioning a place in the Basque Mountains that had a grill. And I said, well, that sounds a bit different. So next day I hired a car and went searching for this hidden little restaurant, which is a bit bit easy to find now. Now it's on the map.
Right.
But this was probably 11, 12 years ago.
Yeah. Is it still a tiny little village?
It is a tiny village. There's only 70 people who live in the village. Right. And I think there's more sheep and goats than people, quite frankly. But it is
set in these beautiful rolling hills, and
it is the archetypal. It's such a beautiful place to arrive into. Mm. And literally there's nothing else there apart from a small church, the restaurant and the town hall, and that's it.
Yeah.
And this beautiful backdrop, these amazing mountains that are just breathtaking.
What are the great dishes that people should try if they're traveling there?
Gosh, it depends what I think, because Spain is like France and Italy. It is just so regional, mm-hmm. and it's like anywhere. It's a product of its environment. So depending on which part of Spain you're going to be in, mm-hmm. You know, whether you're on the sort of the Mediterranean Sea on the east, or the Atlantic or the north. I mean, certainly the coastline in Spain is vast,
right?
And it's, you know, the combination of those warmer waters, those deep coastal shelves, the colder waters of the Atlantic, mm-hmm. which for me, hands down, it's got the best seafood
in
the world.
So Galicia, as a region, is known, within Spain at least, as having the best seafood.
Insane. It is insane. It is literally on another level. There are ingredients like you'd never seen the like of. There are goose barnacles that, you know, people don't think about eating barnacles, but they're a delicacy. You know, men called perthaveros basically risk their lives to collect this seafood off the rocks. Yeah. And it's something you don't really consider as a food group until you sort of eat it. And it's like the most freshest, amazing flavor of the sea, combination of lobster and mussel. It looks weird. Stuff. It looks like a dinosaur's toenail.
What's Galicia like? Did you travel around there?
Yes. We sourced a lot of food, seafood across basically along the coast.
Yep.
To the west. You know, things like you get amazing octopus along there. It's such a wild coastline. Mm-hmm. I think that's sort of, for me, drew a strong parallel to Australia in a certain regard.
Okay.
It's strange, all on the coastline as well, there's, for some reason, I don't know why, there's gum trees.
Yeah, right.
But it's got that wild, open stretches of coastline. And I think because of that wildness to it, some amazing sort of species of seafood.
Yeah. And what about jamón ibérico? That's some pretty amazing stuff. And you can, I kind of like, in a way, that you can only get the good stuff in Spain. Like you can't get good jamón ibérico.
Yeah,
here.
Good luck.
You can't bring it in on the bone.
Nah, so good luck getting that stuff in.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever ingredient, for me, there's so many ingredients in Spain. Like you say, you draw one and, you know, you just mention one to me and it's like, you have to take a moment and just take it
think
all.
About it.
You have to take it all in, because something like the Spanish culture of ham, you know, the animals themselves, the breeds, you know, the black trotted, you know, the black footed pig, or the Iberian Peninsula, the diet, the acorn diet, the wildness of it. I mean, when you see the animal in its environment, and then you smell the ham on, I mean, it's, and the curation is 24, 36 months later. It's incredible.
Yeah.
It is incredible.
And the slicing of it. Just slicing ham is an absolute art form.
It's an art form.
National championships in slicing ham.
Yeah.
Who else does that?
Possibly the Japanese.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, that is a great comparison because they're just so obsessive about these things. I went to a bar in Seville and they had a wall of fame for their ham knives. Whenever they basically sharpened it down to the furthest it could go, they would retire it and put it up on the wall. and they'd been open for like 60 years, so there are about five or six of these ham knives that were revered.
Wow, that sounds like my kind of bar.
Shani, as a food writer, is it kind of a surprise for you to hear that people think that Spanish food is the best in the world? Because a lot of people, it doesn't really get talked about that much.
Oh, I'm not. Well, tapas? Everyone seems to use tapas as a point these days. You know, it's
true.
It's the way that we eat in Sydney, which I also think is one of the best food cities in the world. And a lot of how we eat has stemmed from Spanish culture and Spanish food. And what we eat, how we eat.
To so many people, Spanish food is crappy paella and, you know, tapas, which is
I mean, it does suffer, I think, from a lot of cultures around the world. Mm. Like here, we have great Asian food because we have a thriving Asian culture.
Yeah.
We don't have a strong Spanish culture. Yeah. We have good Greek, good Italian, because of those are people who live over here. They have that family representation.
Yeah.
Tapas has certainly become, you know, quite widespread in its interpretation of, like, restaurants that offer small, bite-sized sharing style of dishes, which is, you know, that comes from that traditional culture where you'd go to a bar in Spain and tapa was the original thing that would come with that glass.
Right.
It would basically be the covering of the glass.
Right.
And the
it means top, doesn't it?
Exactly. So it would be a lid, a piece of bread.
Yeah.
That would sit on top of the glass to keep the flies off your drink.
Right.
And it would always be it was basically a freebie. It'd be like, you know, you order a drink and it goes with your drink. And then you order another one. It's, you know, it's just a nice way to be. And then obviously evolved into sort of smaller style dishes. You know, you've got slightly larger ones, raciones, that would be kind of shared communal style, you know, that kind of idea of communal dining culture, which is now really widespread, in especially in Sydney.
Yeah. So the thing I've always liked about Spanish food is that it's very unpretentious.
Yeah.
Like there are the sort of 3-star fine diners and everything, but a lot of it, particularly in places like San Sebastian and even like Seville and places like that, it's just, you know, you stand up at a bar, you screw up your napkin and chuck it on the floor when you're finished. It's really amazing food, but no one takes it too seriously.
Yeah, true. I think Spain has always been a little bit of the underdog.
Mm.
You know, they just quietly go about their way. It was never revolutionized like the French cuisine was. It was never standardized in that manner. Italy were a little bit slow on getting their act together in terms of behind the French always a little bit. And then Spain just quietly went about their own ways, their own traditions.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the things they discovered, they didn't even report back to. They just kept it for themselves.
Right.
You know, it's reportedly they discovered the Americas, but just kept it as a secret for fishing grounds for cod. So.
Yeah, not a bad idea. Can you get good Spanish food in Australia? Because as Lennox was saying, we don't really have those immigrants who've come in and brought that food with them.
Yeah, I guess if you think about Spanish food in Australia at a top level, you'd go straight to like Movida and what Frank Camora is doing. Mm-hmm. But I was just going to throw it back to you and say, why do you think that is? Because I guess because the Michelin stars restaurants that are in Spain and the beautiful seafood markets and the produce that's over there, I've always thought of it as a real food destination. But I think you make a good point in that we haven't embraced it in Australia like we have Italian and French and that kind of thing. And I think it's also kind of seen as like a cheap or a mid-range food here. People wouldn't be willing to pay the same amount as they would for Italian or French food.
Mm.
Yeah, true. It's quite bizarre in that manner. I mean, you think about even Italian can be quite, you know, family style, straightforward, you know, bowls of pasta or pizza and, you know, and Spain has their own representation of that, whether it be a dish of paella or, you know, a whole roast animal or a whole fish.
Yeah.
But you don't actually see those restaurants here.
Do people ever associate Fyador with Spanish food?
Yes, a little bit. I mean, like, but in the same light that they think Fyador is going to be a barbecue restaurant,
right,
which we're not. Yeah. You know, it's sort of, you know, misrepresentation to a certain degree. But obviously, people think that because I spent 5 years in Spain, it's going to be a Spanish restaurant. Certainly, Spain was a huge, you know, for me, it was a seminal experience.
Yeah.
It was definitely a changing point for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought I'd end up cooking with fire on a daily basis, quite frankly.
You're listening to Flight of Fancy. If you're enjoying the podcast, you can find stories by our guests and other great writers at traveller.com.au. But Shani, when you're traveling, how do you find good food? Because it's all very well, you know, when you're a chef and when you live in a place, you know where to go. But how do you do your research?
Ask a chef.
Well, that's actually my number one thing. Ask a chef, or if you're not confident enough, just quietly stalk them on social media. I have a few people that I love to follow. And you see it happening here as well. Like, so many of my friends will want to go somewhere because they saw it on Dan Hong's Instagram. But you find a couple of people overseas, I think, is a really good one. I normally start out doing my research by going through the archives of great publishers like Traveller, I look at a lot, or the New York Times, and finding their guides and then working forward from that. So, you know, they might say you got to go to this restaurant, then you look up that restaurant and the people that work there and see where they're eating and kind of go down the rabbit hole that way.
Yeah.
It depends how you like to travel. A lot of people chase those Michelin star experiences, which is great. But I like to book one or two nice restaurants and then leave everything else to chance.
Yeah.
And I find, you know, a lot of people like to ask their concierge at their hotel, where do you eat or where should I eat? I think it's better to be a little bit more targeted. So say you're in Osaka, you want to look up what the regional specialties are there. So it might be I can never say this word. Onanokiyam, though, you know.
Okonomiyaki?
Can we just cut out me flopping that up? Yeah, the okonomiyaki or the toyoyaki. So don't say where can I go. Say where can I go to try great toyoyaki.
It's always dangerous because there's this kind of like travelers are always obsessed with talking to locals and finding out what locals. Some locals don't know anything about food.
Yeah,
and
you really ask a local
for a tip, and you end up at this place like this is terrible.
Yeah, I tend to find most concierges will have about 5 restaurants depending on what question you ask. These will be one of the answers you get, but you need to kind of break out of that conversation, go for something a bit more targeted. Or if you go somewhere great, ask the staff that work there too.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's a really good one as well. Yeah. I think the thing of not booking too many places in is an important one. Mm. So I went to San Sebastian is a good example. I went there and booked in at Arzak, which is a 3 Michelin star restaurant, which was incredible. Went to Echebarri, which was also incredible, but then had a few nights of just wandering around the streets and going into different bars. Yeah. And that was just as much fun.
Yeah, no, most definitely. I think there's places that lend itself more to that than others, and certainly places like San Sebastian.
Yeah.
You know, it's really hard to kind of go. I mean, obviously anywhere you can go wrong, but you're kind of limited there as well because of that kind of bar culture that they have.
Yeah.
And you can basically have bites to eat in different bars.
Yeah.
Like you basically, you go into one, you try one bite to eat. If it's good, you stay for a couple more. If it's not good, you go somewhere else. Like you have that. Yeah, and there's so many other places.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, people have this paseo where they just walk from bar to bar and it's you end up bumping into people in the last bar, in the next bar, and they'll tell you where to go next. It's sort of...
Yeah, I found people are so passionate about food there that all you have to do is start people talking. I stayed at a hostel in San Sebastian and I told the guy that I was going to Arzak, and this was like a €20 a night hostel. And he's like, are you kidding me? Yeah. I said, yeah, you know, I'm really excited about it. And so once he realized that I was into food, he laid out this entire map of the city for me. And he was like, go to this place, get the tomato salad, go to this place, get the prawn skewers, and then move on to this place.
And you get places that just specialize in doing one thing. Yeah, like there's one place there that just has mushrooms. There's another place that's the best cheese, another place that has, I mean, everywhere's got ham on, but there's certain places that are more regarded than others.
Yeah,
in terms of how seriously they take it.
I think my other favorite thing to do, and this is getting into like extreme food nerd territory, but is to go to the local market and make it one of the first things you do, because you'll see quite often what is grown locally and also what's in season. And once you understand what's in season, then you can pick a great restaurant.
Yeah.
It's just like you probably wouldn't order asparagus in winter in Sydney. You need to learn like what's going on in the local markets there. And then I think that gives you the tools to spot somewhere great. As well as I said before, like learning the region's specialty dishes and looking out for those as well.
Because so many people go to Italy and like they'll order carbonara in Venice and say it was terrible. They don't do very good carbonara. They order pizza in Sicily. And
I think the one exception to that rule is burgers in Paris, because I swear I've had the best burgers of my life in that city.
Yeah. Right. Where was that?
McDonald's. Staying in the Champagne region. It's like a very romanticized thing, but Champagne region, really rare bloody hamburger.
Yeah. Nice.
Bottle of champagne. Mm-hmm. It was a really great time.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Actually, they do pretty good burgers in Japan as well.
Yeah.
They do other people's food really well there.
Oh, yeah. Whiskey, nail it.
Yep.
Pastry, nail it.
Yeah.
French food, nail it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, that marks a good time to move on to Japan, actually, because we wanted to talk about that. Lennox, you've spent a bit of time there as well.
Not as much as I'd like.
Yeah.
But absolutely, yeah, I'd love it.
What did you like about the food culture there?
Just the fact that they, you know, it's not the jack of all trades, master of none. Literally, it's the master of one trade.
Right.
You know, the guys train and train and train.
Yeah.
And they specialize in, you know, restaurants especially specialize in doing one thing.
Yeah.
And I love that focus because it's very easy for a chef to try and dabble in doing a lot of things as opposed to doing like one thing extremely well to the point of, you know, almost perfection.
Yeah. I mean, there's these legends of people spending 3 years learning to make rice for sushi and stuff. And that actually happens.
That happens, yeah.
Yeah. Which I realized.
Three years if I'm on the fast track.
Right. Yeah. Which I did a sushi making course over there. And,
wow.
And handling rice is actually extremely difficult.
Whereabouts?
In Tokyo.
Fantastic.
A place called Happy Buddha or something.
How'd you go?
Like that. Terrible. Terrible. Everybody got given a little bit of rice in their hand and they said, okay, now just sort of get it in your hand and make it molded into a little ball. Mm. And every single person just went like closed their hand around it and then opened their hand and their entire hand was covered in single grains of rice, which we couldn't get off our hands. And it's how do you do that?
But it's even basic things like knife skills. I mean, there's a certain posture about the way you should stand.
Yeah.
whilst you're cutting certain items.
Yeah.
Which, you know, you never think about in our culture.
And fish should be sliced in a certain way that the grains of the fish will then pick up a certain amount of soy sauce, which will match that what sort of saltiness that fish should have for it. I mean, they just take everything to the absolute finest degree.
That is next level.
Yeah, it really is. And that's just kind of normal over there. Hmm. However, where have you had the best food in Japan?
Oh, it was all amazing. I think the one thing that really, really stands out in my mind is just upstairs at Kyoto Station and having a cold udon noodles with a dipping broth. And it was...
It's weird that train stations have such great food.
Yeah, it's so amazing. Yeah, it's...
I would not go to a train station in Australia looking for food.
It blew my mind. I was just hungry. It was only a couple of dollars. Went in, tiny standing bar with like six people. And just the texture and the bite of the noodles and how clean and delicate the flavors were, I just... It was like I'd been slapped in the face. It was really a revolutionary moment. And that was like after tracking, having 20 different kinds of ramen and chasing all these things. And my like food epiphany moment was at a train station.
Yeah, right.
Having something that I didn't spend hours looking for. Mm. I just went, oh, I'll grab this. And then I was blown away.
It's probably heightened because it's unexpected.
Yeah. How did you find great food there, Lennox?
Difficult because there's just so many choices.
Yeah.
Like literally normally when you're there for, you know, you might be there a week or 10 days. We were 9 days. We just kind of like limited to a certain extent. We made quite a few bookings.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, which ones do you choose? It's like, you know, essentially when we went, we wanted to choose, you know, different expressions. So like, you know, a couple of great tempura places, a couple of nami places, really good sushi places. But yeah, but which one out of the many do you choose? I mean, there's just so much choice.
Yeah. And you can spend an incredible amount of money if you want to.
Yeah, I think we did.
That's, well, I was going to say, I don't think you can have a bad meal in Japan, just a really expensive one.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, some of those high-end sushi joints, you're looking at $600 or $700 a person, aren't you?
Yeah, easily.
Yeah. And then you could go to a dodgy ramen joint that you order by pressing buttons on a vending machine and it costs $5 and it's amazing.
But it's nice that it's revered, like the whole process, like everything that goes behind it. It's not just what you're eating on the plate.
Yeah.
Like it's the whole experience, but you're also paying for all that mastery. You know, you're paying for everything that went before it. You're paying for that guy who spent 7 or 8 years just cutting one fish.
Have you guys ever had any bad experiences with travel? Shani, have you anything gone particularly wrong?
I've had a few interesting ones, and some of the time it involves language barriers, but I was in Cambodia about 8 years ago, and I think Cambodian food has come a long way since then, but I was just eating like the local version of pho every day, and then I was staying with a local family.
So the noodle soup.
Yeah, like a beef noodle soup. I went to the local family and she said, "What did you have for lunch today?" And I told her, and she's like, "Oh, my company's been testing the meat in the street stalls and it's rat. So you've been eating rat for 3 days." It's like, great.
Delicious rat soup.
Yeah, I'm trying to, and then they took me out to dinner and told me the story about their family and how they survived on insects, and then took delight as I was ate tarantula out of you know, just social pride and responsibility.
What was tarantula like?
I remember the taste of the lime and black pepper dipping sauce really well. I think as soon as I bit the abdomen and exploded, I just blanked a little bit and tried to.
I mean, it's deep fried, is it?
Yeah.
But not deeply enough that it would get rid of all the goo inside.
They're pretty big when you think about them, like the circumference of a 50 cent coin, maybe.
Right.
You're not going to be able to deep fry
too much
the
guts.
Texture out of that.
Yeah.
it's more for textural than anything else.
It is. Absolutely. Yeah. Have you ever eaten anything like that?
I mean, got cod sperm in Japan, which, you know, it can be quite confronting. Yeah. Most of the time.
They have a really non-specific name for that, don't they? It's known as something, I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's definitely not on a menu called cod sperm.
why is this?
I remember seeing it in the markets, and it's something else, and if you didn't know
something
what it was,
fairly ambiguous.
Very easily tried. Yeah.
What was it like though?
It was actually pretty good.
Yeah,
I mean, it's super creamy. It is spermy,
right?
Most definitely. But yeah, it's not that confronting, other than obviously the thought complex that goes behind it,
right?
I mean, I think I'd be more confronted if, like, you know, things that I probably don't agree with, like things like whale.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'd probably draw the line there because
mm-hmm.
I'd find that way too much. I just wouldn't even go there.
But when you guys are traveling, what's the secret to a great meal? Is it Michelin stars? Is it lots of preparation? Is it good friends? How do you ensure that you're going to have a great time? simple question for you guys.
It's quite a big question.
Yeah.
There's so much involved there. I mean, there's a lot to be said about, you know, the company you're with, mm-hmm. you know, whether you're traveling with people, whether you're meeting friends, whether you've been to that country before, you know, whether you're familiar with the culture to a certain degree, because that first time you're always a bit kind of eyes open, wanting to explore, which can be amazing.
Yeah.
And then the next time you go back, you're like, you've got a bit of a feel for it and you feel a little bit kind of, you know, your way around. So you can almost sometimes find something almost deeper the second time around,
right?
If not quite that sort of new expression.
Yeah, it's always dangerous revisiting places, isn't it?
Because yeah,
what if it's not as good?
Most definitely. And then obviously, you should, looking at Michelin guides. Yeah, depending on how you take them, you got to take it all with a pinch of salt, quite literally. Because I've eaten in one stars that are better than three stars, and
right.
Yeah, you know,
Echebarri only has one star, doesn't it?
It does,
but it's
much to the disgust of its owner. But
is that right?
He's the one man who ever, yeah, he's the only man I've ever seen cry when he got a Michelin star.
Is that right? Yeah. I mean, I don't.
And not in a good way.
I don't understand why it doesn't have more. But in a way, it's nice that it doesn't, because it sort of speaks to that, you know, relaxed nature of the place. Really.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. You know, it doesn't bother the owner, and it doesn't bother the people that go and eat there.
Yeah.
Like, they go and eat there, he cooks, that's it.
Right. Point. Yeah. And what do you think, Shani? How do you find a great meal?
I think it's really important to push yourself out of your comfort zone, especially mm-hmm. If you're an English speaker and you're traveling to a country where English isn't the primary language, learn a few words. And I tend to travel on my own, so I like to go up, you know, if locals are waiting in a line somewhere, go and have a conversation and see what they're waiting for, and just do those things that you might not feel totally comfortable doing. So, you know, it's the old no risk, no reward.
Yeah,
that's a good one. Don't be too attached to plans.
Mm-hmm.
Don't, you know, stress yourself out trying to find something if you're going to get there and then be so flustered you can't actually enjoy it with enough time to get to the next thing.
No, I think taking a chance is a really great idea, because so often you kind of, like, this is why people end up going to McDonald's stuff, because they can't be bothered, or they're a little bit intimidated by walking into a place that they've never been to before that's full of locals and no one speaks the language. But quite often, you know, people welcome you in and you end up, you know, sometimes it doesn't work out well, but usually you get some great food that you haven't tried before, and it's fun. It's an adventure, which is really cool. Guys, I want to say thanks very much for joining me today.
No, real pleasure. Thank you very much.
Really appreciated you having along. I'm extremely hungry, so we're going to leave now.
Thanks so much, Ben.
Yeah, no, you've been listening to Flight of Fancy, the Traveller podcast. If you would like to read more about some great food, you can go to goodfood.com.au and find Shani's stories. And if you would like to eat excellent food, you can go to Fire Door Restaurant and call in and say hi to Lennox.
Awesome. Look forward to seeing you there.
And if you'd like to subscribe to the podcast, you can find us in iTunes or on your favourite podcasting app.